You want me to? I'm the chairman because Bill is gone, so I'll go around over here. Would that help? If I sat on the other side?
That might help, yeah. Since we do have press here, I want to make sure we don't come up with that.
William, why don't you say please with me?
Let me do that.
They can hear me.
No, actually, I can sit here on the corner and you can sit here on the end.
Just so I, they can hear me. Just no one. Okay, everybody sit still.
What I really need is a bigger table. When I have everybody sit at the table.
I'd like to call the meeting to order. And I would like someone to approve of the minutes of the previous meeting. Do we usually read those minutes? We have all received the minutes.
I think you all got copies, you received copies.
Are there any questions about the minutes or corrections?
I move approval of the minutes as they have been distributed and received.
I second the motion.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Perhaps, Phil, you could present my new staff members for us?
Okay, first I'd like to introduce some visitors we have and then maybe have the board introduce themselves, the council introduce themselves since we do have some new people here today. Behind me is Ann Doswell, who is the editor of the Jasper News, which is our local paper here in Hamilton County. And Kathy Pichera, who is a reporter with the Lake City Reporter, and has covered the Stephen Foster Memorial for quite a while, I understand, and is up here to cover the council meeting today. And then I think you all know Mary. And then I have two new staff members. Before we get to that, I'd like you all to introduce yourselves so that our two reporters can find out who's here and who you all are.
Shall we just go around the
table?
Miguel, do you
want
to
start? Yeah, Miguel González Pando from Miami. I work at Florida International University.
I'm Ronald Foreman from Gainesville. I work at the University of Florida.
And I'm Catherine
Segura
from Jacksonville.
Lillian Saunders from White Springs.
Bert Jones from Hollywood. I work with the Seminole Tribe of Florida.
Gloria, the Seminole people. Yeah, I just work with the Seminole.
I'm a member of the Seminole Tribe of Florida.
We also have two absent members, Bill Baker, who is a retired attorney from Clearwater, and Alan Jabor, who is the director of the American Folklife Center in Washington. He's a 3-year member of the advisory council. Okay, I would like to introduce, I'm very pleased to introduce some new staff members that are coming on or have come on with the program. First off, the person who's been here, I'm going to introduce them by length of time they've been here. The first is Doris Dyan, who's I think all of you've met. Doris is our new historian, folklorist, who's going to be working with Peggy on research and documentation in the field. Doris has a doctor in philosophy and ethnomusicology from the University of Illinois, a master of arts from Harvard, and a bachelor of arts from the University of Pennsylvania. She's done a tremendous amount of field work in Afro-American religious music, and particularly in southeastern Alabama, and we later found out she did a little work in Florida to boot when she was in southeast Alabama working on black music. She was dealing with some people who were from Florida, so she does have some familiarity with our state. She's also worked with German-American musical work in central Illinois, and she's also done field work in Tunisian popular music in Tunis in 1971. Her dissertation was on the role of shaking up singing in the musical culture of black communities in southeast Alabama, published in 1977. She's also an author and on to be published work, The Resources of American Music History, which is basically a bibliographical study, I believe, in it.
Right, it's a directory locating primary source material for all of
She also was a co-author on an article dealing with North America and the Negro Dictionary of Music and Musicians, and I could go on and on. She's done a whole lot of publications and writing and editing work. She comes to us from the University of Illinois Press, where she was working as an editor, and at the same time pursuing her fieldwork objectives. And we're real pleased to have her because she not only has a good amount of fieldwork experience in folklore and particularly in folk music, but also is going to help us clean up our language because she's a good editor too. As we all are interested in trying to save money, we get two for the price of one.
Sounds like getting rid of the four-letter word.
That's right. And we're, very happy to have Doris as an addition to the staff as well as to the community. And just coming in off the road is Norman Loomis, who will be our new arts administrator, who will be in charge of handling the coordination and the development of our outreach programming, particularly as they relate to the festivals and educational programming and other sort of, all the outreach that has to do with the program. Orman is to receive his PhD from Indiana University in, is it in folklore? He will get it, in June, when it's the award? May,
it
being
been,
awarded now.
It has been awarded,
hasn't received it in the mail yet. he just blew in out of town. I haven't had a chance to ask him when it's got.
Is the correspondence?
Probably White Spring is going to have the highest per capita PhDs in the nation, one Cambridge, Massachusetts.
That's right. We're going to remember that and start pushing the community. Orman, as really a Florida resident in a way, coming home, he grew up in and around the Tampa Bay area. He attended Eckerd College and got his BA in humanities from there, and then obtained a master's in social work from Rutgers University, and then went on to Indiana to pursue his museology and folklore degree, which now he's receiving. He's done a tremendous amount of field work dealing with different types of folklore and material culture, particularly artifacts and materials produced by folk groups around the country, and he's got a good amount of experience in dealing with various museums and outdoor museum projects and trying to place those materials into interpretive situations so that they can be explained and interpreted to the people. He was also in 1975 a summer fellow with the Smithsonian Institution researching folk museums and living historical farms. He worked on a study of Minnesota folk life, dealing with traditional material culture in the Iron Range in the area. He has taught folklore at Indiana University. He was a conservator at the Children's Museum in Indianapolis, Indiana, who's responsible for care of general collections and supervision of all laboratory work. He worked with the Connor Prairie Pioneer Settlement Museum in Noblesville, Indiana, and documented regional styles of decorative architectural detail. So he's got, and it just goes on and on, and I can go on for all afternoon with all the things he's done. And he's researched and published quite a bit of papers and documents dealing with material folk culture. And we feel he's very qualified, and we're very fortunate to have him come to work with us. And like I said, he just got in off the road. He taught his last class, I believe, 2 days ago, and left from up there to come down. His wife will be following shortly. We feel that now that we have Orman and Doris, that we have our professional staff is rounded out, and I think we're going to be able to begin to develop the direction of the program a lot more rapidly now that we're going to have some bodies here to really help us begin covering a lot of the problems and areas that we want to in the state. So I'd just like you all to meet them, and after the meeting, maybe visit, talk to them a little bit, get to know them better.
Well, it's very impressive. We're so glad to have you. Very fortunate.
May I ask Phil a question?
Yes, ma'am.
Phil, how many staff members are on your budget now?
We have 12 staff people that are assigned to the Florida Folk Life program, of which one is stationed in Tallahassee as an information specialist handling our information for the remaining staff positions. We have basically, I think it's like six professional, what I would classify as professional positions, and five staff support positions, clerical, administrative, that sort of thing.
Right. Would you do the members of the council a favor and have your office prepare a brief roster in which you identify the members of your staff, what they do, and so on, and so that we might have this available.
Glad to.
Bits and pieces, we learn who's here and so on.
Well, now that it's getting so big, it's kind of hard to keep track.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's good news, but let's keep up with it.
You know, okay, so we'll do that.
Fine.
Okay, well, Phil, I guess we'll go on with your report now.
Okay. I just have a few brief things today. I'm not going to be real verbose. Number one, the auditor's here. He's been here for 3 weeks camping in our auditorium, and things seem to be going well. I never worry too much about auditors. I mean, they're here to tell us what we've done wrong so we can correct it. And, you know, we're managing. He's helping us a lot in trying to reassess some of the things that we're doing and try to, he's been giving us a lot of help in trying to decide exactly how to handle certain problems that we actually had come up with and not had really any answers. So he's here checking over the books and everything from, this is basically from the last fiscal year. And again, I'm not too worried because it was before I came here, so I'm not really too worried about what he's going to find. But anyway, that's been something that's been taking up a lot of our time this last couple of weeks. We've also, I'm going to be traveling to Myakka River State Park next week with Foreman. We're going to begin the planning, and we're on the planning stages for a festival to be put on at Myakka River State Park, which will, we haven't really decided what it's going to be called. It's going to be dealing, we hope, with Florida folklore that exists within the southwestern or the southern part of the state of Florida. And we're going to be doing this in conjunction with the Department of Natural Resources, and they have a large facility down there that can handle crowds real well. And then being only 12 miles from Sarasota and in a very populous area of the state, we hope that by putting a festival on down there, we're going to be able to reach a lot more people. This festival is going to be one that will be in addition to the ones we run here at the center. But this is one of the aspects of our attempt to try to begin to develop programming in other parts of the state so that people don't have to drive, you know, for hours from Miami to get up here to go to a folk festival. So that's going to be spending a lot of our time in the next several months. In that fact, that's one of the major things Norman's going to have to do right after he starts here in another week or two to begin working with the Myakka River Project. I have one item that I'd like to mention to you all that came up as a problem that we have since been able to resolve, but it's something that is, to me, is a very critical issue for us in folklore and folklore programming, particularly as we move ahead pursuing additional federal grant programs. We had a problem with the NEA that I said was resolved, whereas the federal legislation that established the National Endowment for the Arts and National Endowment for the Humanities requires that any person who is a performer of a that is funded by a grant from the NEA or the NEH, and they are performing, and their definition of performing is anyone who is participating in a production or a performance, and they are paid, has to be paid what is known as a minimum prevailing compensation. And a lot of people understand this when they think about building contracts and everybody complaining about federal projects where when you get a federal grant, you go out and get a contract, the federal contractor has to ensure certain minimum wage rates and all this business for the people that are working. It turns out that the same sort of principles applies to the funding that we receive to support essentially folk artists who are coming to perform for us. And apparently what this bottom line means is that the prevailing minimum compensation is those rates that are set by the union in the United States on their union scale for someone who is to perform in a record or someone who is to perform on a stage that's a guitar player. There are certain minimum rates that we have to pay for those people. And unfortunately, what happened was it's not been clear nationally that this had to be done. And so we've had several grants that we were nit and tuck that we did not really have the money in the grant to actually pay the performers to meet those requirements. We've managed in the one grant, which is our record project that you'll be hearing about later, this is where it came up, and we have managed to figure a way to write the contracts and to be able to provide enough compensation to meet those minimum wages. But we're talking about paying people sometimes twice or three times what we have been contemplating paying in the past. And so it looks like unless we can do something, we are going to be working at a national level trying to get those rules changed, because they were written initially to apply to artists, people that were theatrical professionals, musicians that were being subsidized by the NEA. And the union said the NEA ought to be paying, you know, union scale. Just like in a symphony, if you have a symphony and they got a union there, all the people in the symphony have to be paid a union scale. And they're saying that the NEA, if they're going to be supporting these types of activities, should pay a union scale. Well, that's fine for the artist. But when we're dealing with a person who's not a professional, who is, you know, we're just trying to go out and encourage this guy to do something that he's been doing at home all his life, but he's not necessarily doing it professionally. And we have been trying to, you know, offer them honorariums as a token of our appreciation. It turns out now that the way the rules read, they apply to that person also. Therefore, we have to treat him as a professional. And which I don't necessarily disagree with the approach. The problem has been that the amount of money that's going to be required to support those kind of people with those kind of rates is going to reduce significantly, I think, the number of projects can be taken, can be accomplished, because of the limitations of federal funds that exist. So it's a problem I wanted to let you all know to be aware of, and it's an issue that we've had resolved at this point for us, but I don't think it's resolved at the national level. And I intend myself to pursue it and try to see if that does get resolved at some point down the line. It's really disturbing, and it disturbed me a lot, because, you know, we have to sign these assurances that we're paying these minimum rates, and in fact, you know, so many of the grants that have been asked for don't even come anywhere near the amount of money that we're supposed to pay. And so it tends to, you know, we're put in a position then of either paying a high scale or paying nothing, you know, and it's not, I don't think that it's really fair to both either parties about, you know, in that situation. I believe that you have received, I'm not sure if every one of y'all did, but I think Lee may have sent you all some copies of a reorganization statute. I don't know if you all have been following this, the Departmental Reorganization for the Preservation Board, which doesn't really have anything directly to do with us, but the department is proposing a new set of a new statute to essentially change the status of the preservation boards in the United States. I mean, in Florida, and also it's providing for the creation of a new division within the department. And the only area that that's going to affect is that essentially the Florida Folklife Program is going to be organizationally placed within that division. The division. Following Rent, Alan's comment at the last meeting to Lee about the question of the propriety of this particular division, the division will be named the Division of Museums and Folklore, so that we will not be within an agency known as the Museum Division, but that we will be a full partner within that division as far as our programming, so that our unique approach to programming is not going to be overridden by the fact that we're in a museum division. So that's been the only major change that's been done to the bill.
We weren't quite clear on that, whether we are within that division or we are part of that. I mean,
we are within we will be essentially a bureau within the division.
So our purpose is still just the Florida Folklife Program.
Right.
Quite strange.
Exactly.
We do not have anything to do with these other.
These other things apply to completely other. Enabling legislation is picked up verbatim and put into the new statute. In fact, they're just placing us within the framework, the numbers of the framework of the statute, but they're not changing anything as far as wording on our enabling legislation. But we are going to be within the division museums, and you know, Lee and I talked about this, and I had raised a concern as all of us had raised, about the fact that we wanted to make sure that down the line, not because, not with me here and not with personalities, but down the line, that it was to be continually clear that this program was not going to be a museum program. That it was going to be do just what it was set up to do, which was to do generalized programming and so forth. And that is why the wording is set the way it is. It places us as a separate part of the division within the name so that, that you know, one can argue that it's not just a museum division within the department. So I'm satisfied with it. And as it stands right now, we're directly under the Office of the Secretary. And that has good and bad ramifications. And I don't personally have a problem with being put into a division. I think that because what's going to happen is by having that division, we're going to be able to share the museum services over in Tallahassee a lot quicker than we do now. We can use their shop to help us build exhibits. We can use their we can hopefully build a good photography section, which we don't really have now, but maybe through shared budgets we can put together enough money to support a good photographic office so that we can do our own photographs in-house and have them processed and ready for us. Right now, with one photographer in the department, we can't get the kind of photographs we need out when we need them. So it's hopeful that the shared resources of St. Augustine and Key West and Pensacola and the State Museum of Tallahassee and our program together will be able to collectively have some shared things in Tallahassee that we can draw on. So that's the real purpose of having the division set up. I was wondering if you all had any comment or questions about other than yours, about the proposed legislation.
And then the part where, well, I guess that's it. We're under the main part of our office is in Tallahassee. This is what it says here. The
main
center for our program is in Tallahassee. It doesn't mention anything quite a lot. But maybe it's just right here. The Museum of Florida History in Tallahassee shall be the central museum of the division.
Oh, that's right. But that doesn't see what I'm saying is that museum does not have any direct bearing on our offices. Okay? Our offices are still to be here. The central office is for the division of museums and folk culture or folk life will be in Tallahassee. And what they are stating is that yes, the State Museum of Florida History will be the prime museum for within the division that will be set in Tallahassee. But see, they're also going to have other, we're not going to be the only satellite agency. The Museum of West Florida will be a satellite agency, and so will St. Augustine Antigua will be a separate arm, and so will the Key West Museum. So there are actually going to be four field facilities that exist within that division, each with an independent director and pretty much independent control over what they do in their own museums within the parameters of their charge. Like St. Augustine is going to be dealing with Spanish heritage, West Florida with West Florida Heritage. And so as long as they stay within those parameters, there's not going to be a whole lot of determination in Tallahassee for what they do.
I think that it was very fortunate that we were able to incorporate the folkloric part dimension to the title of the division, because I think we all share that concern at the last meeting that we had.
Right. Well, that's what I was shared too. In fact, when we first proposed this 3 months ago, that was the first thing I said. Was that I wanted to make sure that the identity of the program was maintained. And I feel that this is the best way to do it. I mean, any division you get put into, you're going to have a danger of having a new division director come in and decide that you're going to do this. As long as it's clear in the title of the division that it is not folklore under a museum category, then it's going to be a lot easier for someone to explain the true purpose of this program, which is not just museum work. Also, you'll notice in the packet some information that Alan Jabor has sent to us. In Washington, there is a bill in Congress called the Cyberling Bill that is being considered, and it's basically a reorganization proposal for historic preservation on the national level. And a small item within that bill provides for a study to be made jointly between the U.S. Department of the Interior and the American Folklife Center to assess the need for, as they put it, preservation of intangible cultural resources. And basically what this is, or at least I perceive it as being, moving in the direction of trying to tie the preservation of culture and the preservation of the folk traditions that we deal with into the National Historic Preservation Movement. Not in so much of a real tight, direct connection, but in the sense that right now, for instance, an example on dam projects, say any dam project being done by the federal government, there has to be done what's known as an environmental impact statement. And we're also going through several votes up around here with Occidental and everything. And in those environmental impact statements, we now assess the impact of those projects on what I was in preservation, call cultural resources, which were architectural buildings, historical sites, archaeological sites, sites that had tangible meaning to our, you know, our cultural heritage and our historical heritage within the country. What's happened, though, is that at the same time, if you look at the same, for instance, dam projects are probably the most widely known, and if you look into areas like Kentucky and Tennessee, there have been many, many communities that probably had very good, tight traditions that existed that were required to be totally displaced by the mine that was proposed. Well, in those assessments, there may have been statements made that the little communities had very nice architectural qualities and they should be preserved. And so therefore, the agency had to pay to send a team of architectural historians and historians in to draw, and I did some of this work myself, to draw and record and you know, preserve for posterity the remnants of those particular buildings that were there. But there was never any money provided for folklorists to go in and, number one, you know, record and document the culture that probably was going to be lost, because as soon as you start resettling these people who've lived in these communities for hundreds of years and they start moving out and get dispersed, they start losing a lot of their cultural tradition. And so there's no way at this point for the federal government to deal with the policy question of whether it's a policy of the federal government to preserve and promote cultural tradition in the country. So it's hoped that this study that is being called for in this bill will begin the first steps toward developing a national policy toward the preservation of cultural, of intangible resources, essentially folklore and tradition and culture. And Alan requested that we send a letter, and the Secretary did send a letter supporting the bill, which Alan did read at the hearings on the bill, known as the Cyberland bill. And in return, Alan had sent us a package of information dealing with his testimony, the letter from the Secretary, as well as other material that dealt with his testimony to the Congress on the question of folklore in the country, and this is just for your information. And I wanted to give you that background so that you would understand when you're reading it what you're looking at. But you might want to take it home and take a look at it, and if you have any questions or if you happen to be at a cocktail party with a congressman from your area up there, you might let them know what your thoughts are about the bill. That always helps, too. So anyway, that's really all that I have in the report. We can move on. I think I'm going to continue talking. So.
Right. It sounds like that you don't have a choice. So, and under old business, would you review the grant?
Right. I also, did we put in our packet the grant?
Okay.
Yeah, I see it. Okay. Also in your packet, you'll notice the most recent grant submittal that we submitted. This was submitted on Tuesday. It's a grant to the Florida Endowment for the Humanities entitled the Creedy Clark White Oak Basket Maker. And many of you probably remember the segment in one of Peggy's slide tape programs on the Creedy Clark, the White Oak Basket Maker from Lamont. This is a proposal to do a 30-minute television program for PBS on the Creedy Clark. And the way we're writing it is we're trying to place the Creedy